Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined tonight by my buddy, Andrew Hahn. Andrew, how are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
I just want to tell the listeners of the Locked On Clippers podcast.
Are you just going to outright, just straight ignore my question and just do whatever you want to do here?
Help! Help! I'm being held against my will.
This is
if
three.
If you are listening to this, tweet at Fox Sports Foster asking why is he holding me against my will, not allowing me to see my wonderful family and potential children and just lovely cats and dogs and
potential children? I'm going to need you to explain that. Like, the people that you would have potential children with? I'm very confused.
It's confusing times.
This is your third straight podcast in a row here. You're due for a road loss, if you ask me. Just, you know, a schedule-type loss. Kind of like the Clippers tonight, right? Clippers lose 108-97. They were down as much as, I think it was 16. They battled all the way back, took a lead at one point behind J.J. Redick's three-point shooting, and then just couldn't hold on at the end. Some uncharacteristic turnovers down the stretch. Andrew, how was your Thanksgiving?
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't?
No.
Did you not? You didn't turkey? No turkey?
No comment. What is it? No comment. Next question.
Wow. So much hostility. Have you ever gotten no commented at a press conference? I have.
Next question.
Vinny Del Negro did it to me once. Which is hilarious because all of his answers were technically no comments, but he gave me a no comment while I was working for the team. Didn't feel great.
He gave you a no comment. Do you remember what the question was?
No, it was just something that he didn't want to talk about. I think it was something with the rotation, some super specific that no one really cares about that he didn't want to reveal. So he no commented me.
That is, I mean, but if you could do it over again, you probably wouldn't have asked that question.
Yeah. Oh, if I could do it over again, I would have done it much differently. I worked for the Clippers when I was 24, I think I got that job, and a young 24, and I made terrible mistake after terrible mistake. I thought that I could just kind of roll in and make changes and do whatever I wanted to. Without making friends first.
Turns out that's not how it works.
Turns out that's 100% not how it works when you go work for a pro team. So keep that in mind if anyone gets that job.
players and coaches will rarely, very, very rarely in my experience, answer any kind of specific question, any kind of nuanced, granular thing that takes a reasonable amount of time in a public setting.
Yeah.
You can pull them aside one-on-one and have a conversation with them, or if you have a relationship with them, it's a different story. But if you just kind of say, like, hey, coach, in the third quarter after the second timeout, you guys went to a drop-down defense instead of icing it.
They're
just going to, just like, next question.
Yeah, they don't love that. They're going to give you nothing. That's good advice. Andrew, I have a haiku to read you. Do you like haikus?
No, I don't. Okay. Is this some kind of... Is this because I'm Asian?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. No, it's not because you're Asian. Come on. Is that what you think of me?
That is... Yes. That is what I think of you because I'm Asian. Wait, but before you read that, I have one take from this game.
I thought you said you had no takes. This is false advertising.
I said I had no takes, and now...
Now the takes are just flowing.
I'm looking through this. I have one take.
All right, give it to me.
Doc went Jamal in the fourth quarter until about the five-minute mark,
he did. I think. That sounds right.
And didn't go back to Luke, and Marcus Morris just kind of like put like 4 6-points together. Then Luke came in, and then Marcus stopped scoring. And then he went back to Jamal with, what, like, I think under 2 minutes to go or something near the end when they were, like, trying to make that final push. And then Morris started scoring again. It's an interesting position that Doc is stuck in where there's the feeling that you need offense out there.
Right.
And so you want to put Jamal in late in games. But if you can't stop the other team, then offense, you're almost gambling in either direction. Do you think you're going to be able to luck into enough stops to make use of Jamal's extra offense?
Right.
Or do you feel like you're going to be able to stop them long enough for Blake and Chris and JJ to get their shots off?
Well, you need to have someone you can hide Jamal on, preferably, right, for it to always work. It seems like, I don't know how worthwhile it is arguing about it, because I think this is what Doc is going to do. I think Crawford is going to be his closer in just about every game. Is that...
That hasn't been the case in a lot of these games lately, though. Like, against Chicago, I think he patterned Luke's minutes to mimic Jimmy Butler's. So if there is... I think if Doc recognizes that there's a designated, like, big wing scorer, or I guess like just a designated scorer on the opposing team, Luke is going to get a lot of run.
Yeah.
But if you look at this Pistons squad, it doesn't seem like there's an obvious candidate for Luke to guard. Like, maybe he guards Caldwell Pope, maybe he guards Marcus Morris. Because there didn't seem to be, like, an obvious candidate for Luke to be on, that opens the door to say, well, maybe we need more offense and Jamal Crawford should be out there again.
Yeah, Jamal Crawford, 27 minutes. Luke only played 21.
Yeah.
So you say not ideal.
I can't speak to that or not. I'm just going to come out and say that I missed the vast majority of this game. So I basically only caught, you know, the majority of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but I mean, just in general... You would rather the Clippers close games with Luke as opposed to Jamal.
It's...
Or is
there's not a lot of statistical evidence to make that assertion. And I, being an evidence-based analyst, would hesitate to advocate strongly one direction or the other, because last season, the core group of Griffin, Jordan, Chris Paul, and Redick with Jamal Crawford had like an outrageous plus minus in the clutch. And obviously the starting five this season have a very good net rating. So it's not necessarily like one is preferential over the other. Not to give a Doc Rivers type answer.
Oh boy.
Because you know how much I loathe the response of it's a little bit of both, or it's all the things that you've mentioned.
No, that's the Vinny go-to.
Well, I mean, Doc does a lot of that too. That if you ask him a question and you say, is it this or is it that, then he's very, very sneaky about it.
Doc adopted the it's a little bit of both. Vinny was born in the it's a little bit of both.
Right. Well, I mean, Vinny was not the best in terms of hiding that opinion. He'll just say, oh yeah, it's both those things. Doc is, this is where the craft comes in. Doc will say yes to the first thing, and then talk a little bit and then pivot back to the other thing. So in totality, the answer is both the options.
A strong pivot.
And then you don't, but he never says it's both those things.
It's tricky. It's very tricky.
And so you don't really know what the hell just happened.
So I get what you're saying here. Also, I didn't know that you were an evidence-based analyst. That's neat.
What do you mean that you didn't know I'm an evidence-based analyst? That's the majority of the things that I write have point to statistics and, you know, X's and O's and things like that. Like, let's look at the history of this stuff and make a decision.
I'm a gut-based analyst.
I have a lot of, like...
All of my analysis comes straight from the gut. I don't care about evidence.
Yeah, I have a lot
evidence.
Of gut aches. I can't explain why I gravitate towards certain players, but... If we're trying to make an educated statement as to why something is the way it is or whether something should be one way or the other, I usually have the assertion that coaches or players or front office people are more intelligent than I am, or at a minimum have more information than I do.
There you go. Yeah.
So all the armchair coaches and couch GMs out there, let's even if they're making decisions that you don't agree with, it seems a little bold to feel like you know better than people that have a mountain of experience. That being said,
yes, I would agree with you in that. I think that's a safe. Kind of a safe stance to take, but I would say that just from personal experience of talking to you about basketball and picking your brain and the guys that you like, the guys that you don't like, that there are a lot of front office guys who don't hold a candle to you in that regard.
Oh yeah, no, that's true. I'm definitely qualified to take over a team. But I'm speaking for the listeners of the Locked On podcasts.
Whoa! Don't throw my listeners under the bus. They're ready to run the team too. We're all ready to run a team.
33 minutes for John Luehr, and he shoots 5 for 12.
He's been sneaky useful for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I read you this haiku?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Let's yeah, Aditya, our friend from a Red Clips Nation.
Is it Aditya?
Yeah.
That's are how we sure? Are we sure it's the TH?
He hasn't corrected me. Although, you know, maybe he's just being kind. If I'm saying your name wrong, tell me.
Well, I mean, the other thing I guess we would need to know is, like, what is the origin, the etymology of the name? Because that determines how it's pronounced. Because it could also be like Aditya.
It could be. Yeah, it very well could be.
Because I have no idea. Like, what is it? Should we guess?
We'll find. He'll tell us.
Heritage is?
No, I have faith in us. I have faith that he'll tell us.
Do you want to guess?
No, I don't want to guess.
You don't want to guess what his heritage is?
I want to just be right. And then if I'm wrong, he's just going to tell me.
All right.
Is that disappointing for you?
I don't know. I mean, I don't, is there, would it be controversial to make a guess?
I wouldn't say controversial, maybe a little, like a little rude.
Would it be rude? I don't know.
I think maybe a little bit rude.
Because oftentimes you meet someone that has a name that is not, conventional to the Western area, and you're like, oh, that's an interesting name. Like, is it common in...
Oh, that's rude. You just can't say that.
Can you not?
No, you cannot say that.
Man, they say it to me all the time. Oh, Andrew, I've never heard that before.
Andrew.
You say it again, Andrew.
It's pronounced Andrew.
See, you curl the tongue at the end, Andrew.
Oh, man. My wife has the hottest takes about how Stephen Curry's name is Stephen, and she calls him Stephen.
Wait, how is it hot?
Well, she's very upset that his name is spelled as if it should be Stephen Curry, and it really makes her mad that now people are going to assume that S-T-E-P-H-E-N is Stephen.
Well,
it's very upsetting for her.
We've established that the majority of your listeners are Los Angeles residents, right?
Yes.
So, long time residents of Los Angeles will remember an old local commercial about a plumber named Jack Stefan. And the announcer would always mispronounce it, like, Jaff Stefanowitz, Jaff Stefanowski. And then he would be like, it's Stefan, Jack Stefan. And it was spelled just like Stephen Curry. Yeah. So this is not the first time I've heard that name pronounced in that manner.
Yeah, I countered that Stephen is more a traditional V. That's Stephen. And then the PH can really go either way, but she was not having that.
Okay.
All right, let's read you a haiku from A. The Pistons played good ball. The Clippers played bad, bad, bad ball. Dubs back in first place. That's a haiku. It followed the haiku format.
First place? Were the Dubs ever in first place?
Ooh. Well, I mean, last year, I guess.
I guess last year.
If we date back to last year.
Yeah, so I think we've mentioned this before. Greatest start in franchise history, and what does that get the Clippers in about? So this is taping before Warriors-Lakers goes off. But yeah. If we assume the Warriors win that game, the greatest start in franchise history means that they're second place to the Warriors.
It's going to be a dogfight all year long. Every loss is going to weigh heavily in the race for the one seed. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, just the big thing that they would want to do is not fall below the Spurs or at least keep pace with the Spurs.
Sure.
The Clippers do not want to be in that four spot that they settle into so often the past couple of years. Getting to the opposite side of the bracket of the Warriors is a big deal.
Avoid
the
Warriors.
Do you have an opinion on this Luke Crawford closing thing?
I think it's a game by game situation and it's fluid. But I do think when a team has size and has someone that they may post up that plays the three, you should go with Luke.
If an opposing team has a guy that they send off of a lot of screens, they should also probably go with Luke.
Yes, also true. Yeah, I just think unless there's someone that you can hide Jamal on, like you can hide Jamal on Mo Harkless. You can hide Jamal on.
But even in that situation, you would want Luke in the game to guard Lillard or McCollum.
To probably guard Lillard or McCollum. Yeah, I would say in most situations, I would probably want, if you have the lead and it's late, get Luke in there and get stops, and you know your other offensive players can handle it. If you're down late, I can definitely see the thought process of having Jamal in, and I think it really depends on how Jamal plays in the first three quarters. I mean, I think we all can kind of tell with Jamal at this point when it's one of his nights and when it's really not one of his nights. If he has it going and, you know, he has a nice little stint at the beginning of the fourth quarter or towards the end of the third, yeah, you can go back to it and see if he can stay hot. But, you know, if he's 3 for 9 or 2 for 10 or whatever heading into that fourth quarter, maybe you stick with Luke in that situation.
I think that Jamal gets a bit of an unfair rap as well, because late in games, you will see Chris Paul and Blake Griffin defer to Jamal.
Yeah.
Or try and get Jamal the ball and then like not really run anything for him. It's just like, oh, Jamal has a mismatch, or, you know, Jamal, let's try and let Jamal cook. Like, well, you know, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, you guys are the best players on the team. You should be running your action, and then Crawford should be the secondary or tertiary action to that.
He can't. He's a bailout option, but he shouldn't be. You know, he's a late clock option. Not
right.
18 seconds left on the shot clock. Get the ball to Jamal and clear out.
Right.
Yeah.
That puts him in a tough situation, because it's like, okay, well, I guess if you're gonna trust me to do this, then I'm gonna do it, but. That's not necessarily putting Jamal in the best spot either.
Right. One thing from that haiku, it started with Pistons played good ball. And Ralph Lawler said this too on the broadcast, that the Pistons just played really, really well tonight. The Clippers didn't necessarily have a bad game. It's just the Pistons really kind of brought it. And from their shooting percentages, I mean, the performances they got from certain guys, they shot 52% from the field, 47% from three. I mean, they're just knocking down shots. Is that fair? That's fair, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Tobias Harris, 7 for 11. Marcus Morris, 8 for 13. Andre Drummond, 8 for 11. I mean, their starters were just finding ways to score. Let's get to some more 140-character recaps here. The Credmeister General says, the Dallas Cowboys beat the Redskins and the Clippers for the first time ever. I think he's blaming the Cowboys game for this loss. Because the Clippers went to the Cowboys game and saw that yesterday. Can we blame Tony Romo? Is that still a thing? Or Tony Romo's wife?
We're treading even further away from things that I understand.
Jessica Simpson? Can we blame Jessica Simpson?
I have no idea.
Jessica Simpson, she did a Christmas special a while back. It's almost Christmas. Do you have any Christmas takes? You're just not going to answer. You don't even know comment me. You just stare at your
next
screen.
Blankly,
blankly ahead. The Mexican Maestro. Man, my Twitter followers really bring it with their names. says, they sucked defensively right from the get-go and CP was horrid. It was a uncharacteristically bad Chris Paul night. 2 for 9. He did have 15 assists, but 5 turnovers. And some turnovers late when the Clippers absolutely needed to score. They needed to maximize every possession because they dug themselves into a hole where Chris had a couple of turnovers that really kind of took the air out of the balloon, or whatever the saying is. We did that last episode too. I should probably stop saying that. Let's see. Next one here.
The defensive energy or defensive focus has been sliding a little bit. We've mentioned this for a couple of episodes now.
Yeah.
So I don't think after a destruction of the Dallas Mavericks and then Thanksgiving and you go watch a Cowboys game, you go to Detroit against a team that you soundly whipped at home, it certainly makes sense lining up the dominoes in that fashion, why you would see a less than in-tuned Clipper squad defensively.
Right. It's hard to get up for all 82 games. I think I've mentioned that before, too, that there are going to be nights where Clippers come out sluggish and hope that they can get it done with kind of a 75% effort defensively, and it's not going to work out. To their credit, though, they came back. We haven't seen the Clippers get really trounced this year, and I think that means something. That's a sign of a good team too, right?
Yeah, no? I guess. I mean, I make the comment that if you're a good team, then every game you lose should be close. Like, you should have no close wins, and you should only have close losses, because what kinds of teams are you playing that you're narrowly beating, and you don't want to get blown out in any game? So, part of the reason why a team's margin of victory or net differential being as gaudy as it is mattering is because if you play inferior opponents, you want to blow all of those guys out. And when you're playing against the elite teams, if you happen to like lose narrowly,
right,
well, that's okay because you get 7 games in a series come the postseason to be able to try and tilt the balance in your favor against teams of equal or better stature. But this one, I don't know.
They were down almost as much as 20 and battled all the way back. I just think that's a good sign.
I'm curious to hear what the mood and reaction was like coming out post-game, because the last time the Clippers lost was to Memphis, and they were in a foul, foul mood.
Yeah.
They weren't, I wouldn't say they were frustrated, but they were definitely annoyed and salty. And
it's because Marc Gasol was walking around like Conor McGregor.
Well, I think part of what it was as well is they had a lackluster start to the game. And then they came all the way back, and they realized that that is a game they probably should have had.
Yeah.
Or at the very least, they could have had, and they didn't. And there's certain aspects of that game that overlap with this one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 11 points is the biggest margin of deficit this year. This is the biggest loss for the Clippers this year. They lost by 4 to the Grizzlies. They lost by 2 to the Thunder.
So I think it'll be interesting to hear how the players react coming out of this game. It'd be fun to only go to Clippers losses. Like if you could somehow know in advance which ones they're going to lose, because I imagine they'd just be the meanest, grumpiest people around. I guess you wouldn't be going to that many Clippers games this year either, because they're going to win a lot of games.
That's true, especially home games. This is the first road loss for the Clippers this year, too. Another recap from Giants on the Moon. His 140-character recap of the Clippers' loss to the Pistons reads, Crawford, 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 Crawford playing Crawford, too much Crawford. Apparently he wasn't happy with all the Jamal. I think you got people on your Luke wagon.
Why?
I feel like there's resounding support for Luke to play more minutes and to close out games.
I kind of want people to get off the wagon.
Oh, you're saying no more seats on the wagon? Is this like
I don't a, like I just don't a like wagon? Being in a, I like being off. You know, there's a wagon, and then there's like an empty hillside where you can sit and stare at the sunset, chewing on a piece of straw, and meditate on the mistakes in your life, and that's where I like to be.
The hillside?
Yes. I like to be there, but if you end up coming to some epiphanies and then people make that realization and come there, then it's no longer like a quiet place and now everyone is there.
Yeah, but man, you drove the wagon. Isn't
that uncomscomfortable and I don't like people around me and so now I have to go somewhere else.
Man, that's unfortunate. Well, I apologize for anything that I may have done to support that.
Well, I the biggest regret here is that friend of the show, Justin Verrier, implored me to write my analysis last season in the preseason that Luke should be the starting small forward. And I said, no one's interested in that. Ooh. And he said, well, he would be interested in that. And I said, he does not count.
Wow. Sorry, and JV. So,
last season, in the preseason, that is really early on the Luke should need to play more wagon. That's like...
That was like the wheel hadn't even been invented yet.
Like, I invented the wagon.
Yes.
And then I just didn't bother to share it with anyone.
And then you died of dysentery halfway through.
Right, and now there's this grand wagon, and I'm just... I like the wagon that's in my barn more.
It's enough wagon talk for now. Chris Daly tweets in with his very succinct recap. He says, poop, poop, JJ, poop. Right to the point. JJ almost brought the Clippers back into this one again. He remained hot. Third quarter was knocking down threes like crazy, but ultimately just wasn't enough. Let's get to the next one here. Count Monte Carlo says, Stan played four shooters and Drummond, which caused a lot of mess in the Clippers' defense, and Clippers were lazy on their pick-and-roll switches. Yeah, from what I saw, it just didn't seem like the effort was 100% there. There were little bursts of effort, especially when they made the comeback where it looked like, okay, that was their push and they were going to steal the game away. But there were just too many defensive lapses in this one. Let's see what else we got here. Louis Doby says, felt like last year for the first time this year, least fun game to watch of the season. Last year they did this sort of thing kind of a lot, right?
Have not fun games to watch?
Yeah, they were, I would say they were a generally unenjoyable basketball team to watch last year.
I would say that that is true. It's tough for me to recall because the position I was in and the responsibilities I had last season made it difficult for me to focus intently on the Clipper games.
Right.
And so a lot of that regular season was just a blur to me.
It was, let's put it this way. I've tried to watch every single Clipper game this year. I've watched the majority of all of them so far this season. Last year, I would go games at a time without watching and didn't really feel that bad about it.
Yeah, I remember messaging with you last season saying like, oh, hey, I saw this quarter and this thing happened and you were just like, I'm not watching that game.
I just had zero interest, really. I was kind of one of those people that was on the fast forward to the playoffs. We know who they are in the regular season. There's not a whole lot new going on. And there was some, you know, there was some anger for Clippers, the moves that they had made and kind of the decisions and the path that they were going down. So, yeah, I kind of checked out last year, but I checked in this year, and I picked a good year to get totally 100% back in.
Can I ask just a complete non sequitur?
Yeah.
How do you slide into DMs?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually DM'd anyone on Instagram. I haven't done any sliding.
Oh, is it on? It's the thing you do on Instagram?
Wait, I have Twitter pulled up right now, and I just saw that you tweeted, "How do you slide into DMs?"
Yeah,
that's gonna go well for you.
Oh, wait, no, that was. Should I just leave it up?
Yeah, leave it up. Was that like a question you had wrote down to ask me?
No, I was trying to slide into someone's DMs.
You're terrible at everything.
Fine.
We're ruining the internet. Just leave it. Maybe you'll get some good responses.
So you don't have an answer?
No, I have never slid into anyone's DMs. My wife will be happy to know.
Could you ask your wife how to slide into DMs?
Hey, but now. Don't go sliding into my wife's DMs. That's not okay.
If you ask her, then I don't have to.
If you do, though, make it, like, a funny, like, gif of, like, puppies. That's the key to her heart.
Wait, do you have the ability to edit out stuff?
What, on the podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't really want to.
Okay, then.
Then carry on.
Right, yeah, I was gonna go off on an even long tangent.
Why don't you just tweet me whatever you were gonna say? next recap, at Clip Since 84, he's going New York Times style. He says NYT style. After Jerry World, a lackadaisical effort. That's good. It's a good headline. Clippers, our boy Clippers says, trade CP, Blake, DJ, this is a lottery team. Clearly in jest. And our last one, Benedict says, why the heck wasn't JJ back in the game earlier in the fourth? He came in with 5 minutes left in the fourth. That's terrible. I was actually kind of thinking that during JJ's hot streak, if Doc was going to check with him and be like, hey, do you want to keep going? When someone's hot like that, I feel like it's almost, I know you have your rotations and you have your set plan and you want certain groups together and all that, but when someone is going nuclear, you almost like got to check with them, right? And be like, do you want to stay? Is that a thing in the NBA?
He did keep the starters in an unusually long time in the third quarter because Blake had it going a little bit, JJ had it going, and I think at a certain point, as hot as a player is, if you want them to be rested at all or have anything left in the tank to close the game, you're going to have to pull them. You can't just leave them in forever.
Yeah. And it is one of those things, too, where maybe he goes 2 minutes and doesn't even get a chance to get a shot off. And right. now your whole rotation is screwed up. Yeah, I get it. I can see both sides of the argument. I would think in that situation, though, I don't know. I think I might have left him. JJ's in such good cardio shape that I think you could just buy him a few minutes in the fourth quarter and he would have been fine to come right back.
But I disagree.
But then again, we are in the start of a road trip. It's the very early on in the season. He's a 31-year-old player who's had back problems in the past. You probably don't want to push his minutes into the 38-40 minute category.
Correct.
You would lean more that way.
I mean, I think given the way this team is playing, if they continue to keep up their level of attention, no player should play 40 minutes. There's basically no regular season game
that's worth
putting the mileage on these guys. Not more than anything. They want us to be on the opposite side of the bracket of the Warriors. And then second to that, you want to make sure as many of the players are as healthy as possible going into the postseason.
See, and that's why you're smarter than every GM in the league, just like you said earlier. All right, Andrew, I'm going to let you get out of here. I'm going to wrap up the show here. Thank you guys for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. You can follow Andrew Hahn on Twitter at Andrew the Hahn. You can also follow me on Twitter at Fox Sports Foster. Make sure you subscribe to the Clippers podcast, which is Andrew's venture with our buddy Jordan Heimer. And you make sure you subscribe to our podcast as well on iTunes. Like, review, rate us both. We would really appreciate it. If you have questions for the show, you can email me, fosterdj3@gmail.com. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Locked On Clippers podcast. We will be back following the game on Sunday. Enjoy your weekend.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.